finally this week on Main Menu, we join Eric Damery from the Jaws 5.1 presentation at this year's Site Village exhibition. We join the presentation during a rather lengthy discussion of the new Freedom Scientific Authorization System.
You can burn CDs for clients and then just mail them the CD or hand it to them. They install it on their computer. When they put it in, it auto-runs and puts their key in. So they don't have to ever enter a number. Because one of the problems in getting these products started is you're dealing with new users who can't type numbers in and letters. And the activation codes that come back are like going to be 100 characters, alphanumeric. And it would be tough to enter it in. So you can create activation CDs for somebody, given their knowing their locking code and their authorization number.
Okay, John.
If you go to the JAWS window, there's several ways to find out what someone's locking code is. If you go to the JAWS window, you can go to the About box.
Okay, menu, JAWS help topic, update authorization, about JAWS for Windows, Enter, leaving menus, about JAWS dialog, JAWS job access and speech version 6.00.50.
And we've added edit fields now.
Serial number, folder read only edit 88,361.
So that's where your serial number's found.
Tag, locking code, folder read only edit 100-2037.
And your locking code is a number like 7 or 8 digits. Now I can just copy that from here, hold up my clipboard, go to that web page and paste it in. So we're trying to make it so that you can gain access to all of these things. If you don't want to go to the About box,
escape.
You go to the JAWS window, just do Insert F1.
The JAWS application window provides access to basic settings, voice settings, and build. Press Alt plus all the choose settings to adjust. Press F1 to open the JAWS help system. Locking code colon 100-2037 authorization number colon 75,281 D1 star. Press escape to close it.
So we put it right into the Insert F1 message. So if you use, so users, all they got to do is get to the JAWS window, do the Insert F1, and our support people can get it. Now, the authorization number you see is in here as well. But we only list the first 7 digits, followed by the wildcard asterisk, because you don't want someone to get a hold of your authorization number. If they did, they could then go steal one of your licenses, one of your activation keys, right? If I knew what your authorization number was, I could go to my computer, type in install JAWS, use your authorization code and my locking code, and I could get a key from your license. So we make it difficult for someone to find out what that number is. If you communicate those 7 digits to us or to Sight and Sound, that's all we need to verify. There's enough differences that we're not going to find an exact match. Okay? So there's a website available to anybody to be able to go and get this activation and get it installed. The other question that comes up is how many keys do we get? Mm. Now, I'd like to start this answer by asking you, how many keys do you get today?
Right.
So while we distribute the authorization disk with 5 keys, there is the limit of keys is only a limit as to, you know, how many you're going to need. If you have 10 computers and you've installed JAWS on your first 5 and want to install it on 5 more, and you contact the support department, Sight and Sound can get a code and we'll send you a code that resets the key count on your disk. Mm-hmm. So we've only provided 5 keys because it seemed like an adequate number for most people, and as it turns out, it was. On this new authorization program, we're providing you with 3 keys off the bat instead of 5. The reason being is that it's much easier for someone to pirate your license. Because if they took your authorization code, they could literally put it on the internet and email it to anybody in the world who could then immediately install your software license on their computer. With the authorization diskette scheme, they actually had to take your diskette and send it to somebody for them to install the license. So this is much easier for someone to pirate or share with others across the internet. So we are limiting it to 3 initially, but the nice thing is, if for some reason you used your 3 and you request a key reset, we don't have to send you a code. You just submit the request to us in writing. We know who you are. We just do the reset instantly and you're ready to go and you can go get it again. Because we control the keys, they stay on the network, on our license server, okay? can I move my key back off of a computer? With the authorization diskette that you have today, Quella, you can put the diskette into a drive, install your key, and later put the disk in the drive and retrieve the key. This internet-based authorization scheme that we use, which is like the Microsoft solution as well, you can't do that. You can't retrieve a key. Once it's on a computer, it stays there. You can delete it, but you cannot send it back onto the pile to be retrieved later. So we will have to get key resets in the future eventually. There's two types of licenses that you can get. There's a single user license and there is a network version. Now you guys are at a school. Do you have a site license?
Yeah.
So you'll be getting a network license though. And that has a license server that is installed on one of the computers, which then distributes these license keys out to whoever tries to log into JAWS. So when somebody logs into the network and runs JAWS, instead of having keys on the local machines, it won't find it locally on the hard drive. It'll go to the license server, and it will send a key out. Once that user logs off, the key is sent back. So you can install JAWS on every machine in school, and if you have a 10-user license, up to 10 students can log in and run JAWS from any of those computers. If an 11th one tries, they'll be denied access because there isn't an available license. Until someone else logs off, then they can retrieve it. Make sense?
What's the difference between having a single license at 655 and a 5-person license?
Well, a single license can be used by one person.
Yes.
So you can only have one person running the screen reader at the location. Whereas a site license offers you the ability to have multiple people using the license at the same time.
What's the difference in the price?
Well, Sight and Sound, best to quote that. They can work out.
I haven't got the price off the top of my head, but I think sort of like a 5-user was around $2,705 or something like that.
Eric, Dave Williams from ACB Radio. Quick question. Is there a dongle option available?
Yes, we currently have dongle options and will continue to have that because there are certain countries where we will continue to use dongle versions of our software. So if somebody wishes to have a dongle, and let me give you an example of somebody who will, somebody who travels around quite a bit, uses lots of different computers, maybe once, maybe multiple times, but they're going to want their license installed in many different places. They would be far better off having a dongle, taking it with them and popping it into the USB or hooking it up to the parallel, depending on which dongle they request. And then when they launch JAWS, it just gets the authorization from that. So they can get a dongle tied to their serial number, so they can have both the internet authorization and they can have a dongle for when they're traveling. There is a fee for a dongle. I believe it's like a $45 fee in the U.S., something like that. But these things have a cost associated with them, and we will, you know, keep it down to whatever the costs are. We have been using dongles quite a bit, probably more so in the States. Have you done much here?
We've done quite a few.
Yeah. So, but I will say that in most cases, the authorization disk, if people are buying computers that don't have them, you can get add-on 3.5-inch disk drives that can be connected to a computer. So in the event somebody is having a problem, there are quite a few 3.5-inch USB disk drives out there that do work. There are some that don't, but I have talked to some people that have them. Oh, there you go. I'm going to pass around the dongles so you'll see what a dongle is for those of you who don't know. I'll give them both to you. The larger one is a parallel. Plugs onto your parallel port like a printer, and the nice thing about the parallel one is that you can then attach a printer over it. So if you had a computer, disconnect the printer, put the dongle in, put the printer back on the dongle, and it passes through. Now the USB dongle can be plugged into a USB hub, I believe. So if you have, you know, if you need to plug in a USB printer and you're going to use the USB dongle like this, or maybe you have a dongle for another application, you can put a hub on the USB port and plug multiple USB devices to it. So that you'll see the USB one is a little smaller. I also think there's a loop on the end of the USB one, so it kind of fits nicely on a keychain.
I'll give you a little example. You know, people ask about authorization and copy protection. It's not unusual for mainstream technology, mainstream software programs that are used by limited numbers and are fairly expensive technologies to develop, to use these dongles and types of authorization. And one example that someone had told me about once, it made a lot of sense, was appraisal software. So people that go out and do housing appraisals and so forth, it's a fairly expensive piece of software, like $1,000 or a $1,200 product. And it was sold with dongles as well. You have a dongle to use it. Other questions on the authorization?
Are you still going to be able to run previous versions of JAWS with the internet authorization?
Very good question. For someone who doesn't quite understand why someone would ask that, most people that have JAWS screen readers that have been using them for a while, it's not unusual for you to have multiple versions installed. Whenever you install a new version of JAWS, up until this point at least, it always installs itself into a clean directory. In other words, we don't recognize the fact that maybe you have an earlier version and go out there and just install ourselves over the earlier version. You literally get a whole new product when the new release comes out. But even if it's not a paid-for upgrade, very seldom do we do patches. We usually put a whole new version up there on the internet for you to download, and it installs itself into a separate directory. Now, the new internet-based authorization is only going to apply to versions moving forward from here. So starting with 5.1, there'll be an internet version available, and then 6.0 will come out at the end of the year as an internet version for everybody. In English-speaking countries. But that internet authorization will not apply back or recognize or know anything about your previous version. So if you have 4.5.1 installed on a machine, the 4.5.1 authorization that you were using, probably that 3.5-inch diskette key, will still have to be on the computer in order to run 4.5.1.
Okay? So it's 5.1 upwards, then, yeah?
5.1 and upwards, right. Yes. So there's advantages and disadvantages. I'll point out maybe a little of both here. Let me point out the disadvantage. I'm not sure I know what the advantage is yet. The disadvantage is if you did not have JAWS previously, so that the first version you ever purchase is 5.1 or above, you will not have the ability to go back and download and install the earlier versions that we have and run them on your computer as well, outside of running it as a 40-minute, mode, reboot your computer, because you will not have the old 3.5-inch authorization. We keep all those old versions posted on the web right now, so anyone who has the proper authorization, the 3.5-inch disk authorization, can go out and download those earlier versions and run them, but that will go away. Hopefully most people are moving on to the newer versions and satisfied with them. I think that tends to be the case. I know there are certain releases of our software that have come out over the last 8 to 10 years here that people have liked and hung on to, and 4.5.1 was one of those releases. It was a very good one. A lot of people liked that product. But I think this 5.0 update from March is a great build, and I know that 5.1 is going to be as well. So,
Eric, I have a question about versions. Dave Williams again with ACB Radio. Can you remind us the difference between the professional and standard versions of JAWS first?
Okay, the question was, what are the differences of a JAWS standard versus a JAWS professional? It's tied to what operating systems would you be installing the screen reader on. We consider the professional operating systems NT4, 2000, and XPs as professional versions. And 98 Millennium 95 as standard, but we've also included XP Home for anyone purchasing our standard version of our software. So if you have a standard license of JAWS for Windows that you've had for a number of years, and you're going to get a new computer, if you get an XP Home computer at home, you can continue to upgrade your JAWS standard license. We still have two versions of our license set. You know, a lot of the difference between home users and professional users from our standpoint is the development needs are different. Home users like to have access to the internet, email, some word processing. Professional users are trying to use Java-based applications running with the Access Bridge. They're interested in running Microsoft Project. They're interested in running very sophisticated applications whereby, you know, we're trying to do some development in those areas. They also tend to have a lot more support needs. The support costs are much higher for us, for our professional customers, than they are for individual end users running home machines. So we have two different products, the professional version and the standard version, but the standard version has access to all the same scripts. You still can access even Java applications with a standard license. So if you're running XP Home, running Java applications, you can still access those Java applications. You get the advantage of it, but most people don't use it. Does that answer that question?
Thank you.
Yeah. So talking a little bit about some of the more sophisticated stuff, one of the questions that didn't come up in the morning session upstairs, and while it has been a topic, it hasn't been one on the minds of most individual end users at home, is the ability to do things like Citrix and terminal services. This has been some technology that's been blocked out of screen reading and magnification products for a number of years, and over the past couple of years, ground has been starting to been forged ahead. We've been forging ahead in some of the development and getting access to these applications running in a Citrix environment and a terminal services environment. And starting with 5.1, our users are going to begin to get access to this as well. The work has been ongoing now over the past year, and we're about ready to roll this out for folks that need it. And I want to take just a couple of minutes and try and explain it in layman's terms if I can. Hopefully this won't take too long. So Citrix and terminal services, what it means to corporate, you know, and government entities that are out there trying to do this, and the reason they're going in this environment is to save costs and to gain security. What it means is you set up a server in one location and you install the applications that all the people in your organization or that work with your organization are going to need access to. And so these applications all run just on the server. And people log into that server and run that application or a session, their own user session of that application on the server side. So rather than having to go around to your offices and install a version of maybe Microsoft Office or some proprietary application, instead of having to install that on everybody's machine in the office, making sure that everybody's equipment is got enough RAM and is beefed up enough to be able to handle those applications and then maintain those applications, they do this through Citrix or through Microsoft Terminal Services. And this cuts the cost down significantly. The IT guy doesn't have to run around everyone's desk, and you don't have to have a bunch of expensive equipment. Just have a really good server someplace and then log into it with whatever machines you've got. So the applications don't actually run locally. They all run at one location. So your screen reader now will need to be installed on that server as well, along with the applications that are going to be run. And then you also will have a screen reader of the same version installed at the local or the client side, so to speak. And
when you log on to the Citrix server, it can be set up so that whenever you as a user log in, it recognizes you and it launches the screen reader in your session. And then you can run the application or applications on that Citrix server that you're allowed to run or set up to run with. And the screen reader is running on the server, capturing the information, keeping track of what's happening, and sending it back through a virtual channel to the screen reader on the client side, which in turn acts as basically a synthesizer or a driver for the Braille display. And so the screen reader locally, in this case, isn't doing anything more than just passing the information out to you. You can, of course, at the same time that you're running a Citrix application or a terminal services application, Alt-Tab and land in an application that's running locally on your machine, at which time the screen reader recognizes that you've just come back to the local machine, so the desktop screen reader that you've got on your PC kicks in and starts talking. So there's some handshaking that goes on between the two. They have to recognize what's happened. Now, I had hoped to actually demonstrate this here at the show for you, as I did demonstrate it at the ACB and at the NFB conventions this summer, live for the audience. We have a machine set up in Florida. If you have a relatively good internet connection, you can just go right across the internet and log into the machine. And for the most part, if you came up and sat down at my keyboard, you would not know which one was local and which one was across the country. It works very well. But with the dial-up connection that I've got here running at about 56K, it's a little sluggish. You hit a keystroke, there's a 10-second delay before that keystroke happens and you get feedback. So you probably wouldn't want to be doing your job on a Citrix environment with a 56K dial-up connection. But if you get a fairly good connection, or if you're on a LAN, you don't even notice the difference. So it works very well. So we'll be rolling that out. There will be the need to purchase a remote or terminal services Citrix add-on on the JAWS side. We'll basically set a flag on your authorization, and you'll be able to then follow the instructions and do the server install, the client install, and they'll be able to talk to each other. If you have a single user authorization, you will not have to put authorization on the server. The single user authorization on your client will be able to authorize that server version to run, provided you have the remote desktop and Citrix flag set in your authorization. And there'll be pricing information about this showing up on the website in the next several weeks of how you go about ordering that to get it. Now let's talk a little bit about remote desktop, because I actually think that this is, for most users, going to be of keen interest. Remote desktop is very similar to Citrix and terminal services. However, it's intended for one person to go into a remote session and log on to a machine. Rather than with Citrix, you could have, depending on how many people are in your Citrix license, you might have 20 people running a version of JAWS on a server in a Citrix environment. But with remote desktop, you would only log on one person at a time could run it on that machine. So the way many people, including myself, will be using remote desktop is that I'll let my computer at the office, I'll install JAWS as a server on my work computer, leave it turned on when I go home at night, and go to my house computer at home, log on to my desk computer, and I can run all the applications, including my email and any access to any files or anything on my desktop machine through my keyboard at home, and I'd be able to do that with SpeechNow. So we think a lot of users will want to take advantage of this. We do anticipate, well, first of all, it's been quite a bit of work to get this, to add this component in, and not everyone is going to take advantage of it. So we're not increasing the price of the screen reader currently. However, we're going to charge for the ability to add this feature in. As to what the exact cost is, I can't be quoted yet, but I think we're looking in the range for an individual or something like a $200 add-on, whether it be remote desktop or Citrix. Of course, if it's a site licensed environment and there are, you know, 10 people or 20 people trying to gain access to a Citrix terminal services, it'll be site license pricing of some sort based on that $200 number, is my guess. There will be an opportunity for agencies or organizations that maybe they don't have local apps running at a PC, and all they want to do is have access to an application or two in a terminal services session or a Citrix session. So they'll set up a server someplace, and you'll just sit down at your desktop, and when you boot it up, it automatically logs into the server and runs that application. So you wouldn't even have a screen reader necessarily installed and running locally and licensed locally. It would all be on the server side, and the licensing would all be on the server side.
Sincere thanks to our contributors on Main Menu this week. And don't forget, of course, it's your program. And if you'd like to submit an item for consideration, then drop us a line, mainmenu@acbradio.org. Until next time, I'm Dave Williams. Bye for now.